Arizona's Afternoon News with Mac and Gatos. The Big Four at Four.
Big Four at Four.
Four at Four.
Four big and blockbuster stories that you need to hear.
Big Story One.
This is really about Diane Douglas. This is yet another example of, rather than Diane Douglas supporting educators across the state, making sure that they have the resources that they need, she's threatening educators.
Yeah.
And Diane Douglas, as a member of the State Board of Education, she's the one who's really pushing this agenda, whereas I think the rest of the State Board of Education is trying to do their best to support educators.
That's David Shapira. He is running against Superintendent of Public Instruction Diane Douglas, and what he's talking about is what we discussed yesterday. The Arizona State Board of Education, they were going to look into punishing teachers who participated in the walkout. Yeah, that's a good move. That's not a waste of time at all. Diane Douglas, I guess they made a decision today.
Yeah, they did, and thank goodness they did. The board has decided that they are not going to pursue it, and rightly so. There are things you do because it's the right thing to do, and there are things you don't do because it's the right thing to do. You don't do this because it's the right thing to do. Not that you could, a technicality, did they break the law, were they state employees? You could argue that all day long. But the amount of backlash from not only teachers who would be fired or censured or a letter in their folder or whatever, and the amount of parents who would be angry, You don't want to deal with that, especially during a re-election, especially during an election season. You don't want to deal with that. So I guess they listened to the show yesterday when we kind of sort of said,
don't
this
do
would
it.
Be a bad idea, and they've decided not to bring it up on Monday morning.
So they're no longer going to consider punishing teachers. What am I supposed to say? Congratulations for making the right move?
Well, it's the first one. I mean, if you look at the history of education in Arizona, it's a good decision.
Let me ask you a question. Diane Douglas, Superintendent of Public Instruction, horrible job, okay? She's done a bad job from day one. She has not done a thing for teachers. I think she has very little respect for teachers. And
little respect from teachers, too. We talked to a number of teachers that don't respect her.
It's a great point. I'd be scared of what the teachers would bring on me if I was Diane Douglas. Do you want 50,000 teachers showing up on your front lawn? Ask how Governor Ducey liked that. He didn't like it, and he acted, which is good, and I applaud the governor finally doing that. But Diane Douglas doesn't get it. She never has understood what her job is, what she's supposed to do, what is the plight of teachers. Did she help get them any money? Did she do anything
in
helping?
No, in fact, she wasn't supporting Red for Ed. She said, we would like you to stay in the classroom.
And that's the other part of this. If she was going to try and get teachers fired, legally it wasn't going to work because it was the superintendents who canceled school. They knew the teachers weren't going to show up. So what did the superintendents do? They canceled school. So
if you cancel,
even if you wanted to go in and you're a teacher, right? School was closed.
You couldn't have gone in.
You couldn't have gone in. Now, if the superintendents kept the schools open,
right,
you might have a different story legally. But even teachers were told not to go in. Diane Douglas probably didn't know that because she doesn't do her homework.
So but it's also on the Board of Ed, too. So Lucas Narducci, the board's president, released a statement, said it was premature at this time for the board to have the discussion. Hopefully this is never brought up again. It doesn't need to be.
Why would you want to punish teachers for only trying to make a living? Why would you do that? Why would you look to get a teacher fired? You don't have enough teachers, first of all. Teachers are still leaving in droves. They have been leaving in droves.
The logistics of trying to replace the teachers would be, it'd be insane. You couldn't replace the teachers you got rid of. Are you kidding me?
I just think that, and I said this yesterday, for Diane Douglas, she needs to be voted out. And I don't care who you vote for. Do your homework. You know, you and I need to do our homework when we look at this. I mean, there will be an election.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know much about the other people. I'll be honest, I really don't.
No.
All I know is Diane Douglas is terrible. I mean, you know, it's just, she doesn't know what she's doing. She's not helping your child learn, and she needs to go. She needs to go.
And for those of you who vote straight ticket,
that's one of the reasons she
was voted in. I mean, don't vote straight ticket. Know who you're voting for.
every time I ask her a question and she's here, and I don't mean to be mean, but it's like a hamster running around one of those things.
She doesn't
know how to answer a question. I even ask her a simple question, and then you didn't answer my question. I don't think you understood my question.
Right, right.
So the good news is the Arizona State Board of Education, they decided not to waste everybody's time, and it would have been everybody's time, to have a vote and see if they could have punished teachers. And I was just worried they were going to make an example out of a few. But they
Which would be bad, too.
Yeah, they were thinking, let's go over tens of thousands of teachers. Let's see if we could do something.
Come on.
I think teachers would have shown up. I think parents would have shown up. And
oh, parents took to social media last night.
Oh, did you see? I didn't see
that.
Yeah,
parents took to social media and just said, hey, look, this is a farce if you try to do this. It's just unbelievably stupid.
Wow, wow. You're listening to the Big Four at 4. First 20 minutes of the 4 o'clock hour, we bring you four big blockbuster stories.
The Big Four at 4. Big Story 2.
It was mind-blowing. It was a dream come through, and, you know, I was starstruck. You know, seeing the reaction on my parents' faces, it was just priceless. And, you know, as I got up on the podium and shook the commissioner's hand, I just took it all in, emotional. I was very emotional. But I tried to keep it professional until, you know, I got off the stage. But, you know, it was a blessing. I'm very happy to be a Phoenix Sun.
DeAndre Ayton, he is the Phoenix Suns' number one draft pick, first one in franchise history, first U of A player to go number one as well.
Hey, no pressure.
Yeah. But I love what he said. My parents were loving it, too. Yeah, your parents know you're a millionaire now. How great is that?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, listen, this kid worked hard probably from the age of, like, 5, okay? Trying to, you know, they probably saw something in him. Remember, he's 19 years old.
What do you mean they saw something in him? They saw that he's, like, 6 feet in third grade.
He was born 4'2".
Right, exactly. Hey, so, I think this kid's got potential. He's taller than everybody.
It's great to see a success story like this. I think the Phoenix Suns are going to have a great run, hopefully, here in the next few years. DeAndre Ayton is going to be part of that. And, of course, his parents are going to be just thrilled because, you know, they're going to watch their son become a star in the NBA.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's always a chance the number one pick could be a bust. It's happened before.
Oh, a
chance?
Doesn't
look like it. It's happened a lot.
Oh, Sam Bowie, Greg Oden. I mean, there's been a lot of number one busts.
Michael Jordan was number two.
He was drafted
Sam Bowie
second.
Was number one.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, how'd that work out?
It didn't
Portland.
Work out well.
Mm-mm.
It didn't work out well. But, you know, DeAndre Ayton says, I want to be in the community. I want to be a leader. I mean, remember, this is a 19-year-old kid. And, you know, he's got
good
parents. He's got good team around him.
But if I'm the Suns, I definitely reach out to a Larry Fitzgerald or Charles Barkley.
Not Charles Barkley. Charles Barkley is not a role model.
Excellent point.
Charles Barkley is not Larry Fitzgerald.
Okay, reach out to Charles Barkley to say,
no.
This is what you don't do.
Okay.
Go out with him, listen to his stories, and don't emulate Charles Barkley.
I cannot believe you put Barkley in there.
Well, I mean, the reason I say this, all kidding aside, is Barkley doesn't – he tells you his reaction is – he's honest.
Yeah.
And he has said he has made a lot of mistakes, but, you know –
Well, we've seen them all here in Phoenix.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
Well, which one do you want to go through? The stop
right.
sign?
He has
do you
the
wanna,
video.
Do you want to talk about the gambling or
right.
do you want to talk about – oh, I don't know. He threw somebody through a glass window.
Plate glass window, right. Okay, so maybe the first call is to Larry Fitzgerald. I see your point
well,
there.
Well, you know
– And hook up a mentorship for this guy.
I think you hope that – you know, that he's 19. Because,
but,
you know,
but
you, go
you,
on.
Made, you said it, you had a great point earlier, though. He's 19. He's on top of the world.
Yeah.
You do want to go out and be a 19-year-old and celebrate.
Oh,
I mean,
you do
want to do some things.
Sure.
You know, he may buy an expensive car or something like that.
Go ahead and do it.
But as long as he's motivated and he wants to win and he works at basketball.
Yeah.
You know, the Suns should love that.
Yeah. The Suns introducing their number one overall pick today, DeAndre Ayton, and we wish him the best of luck. I can't wait to go see him play. I really can't. I can't wait to go see him play.
Yeah.
He's going to be a big star.
Well, I mean, you want to see something exciting.
Yeah.
And this
He's
brings
bring
excitement
it.
To the Suns.
The Big Four at 4. You are listening to Mac and Gatos, and at 4:05, we start the first 20 minutes of the show with four big blockbuster stories. We still have Big Story 3 and 4 to come.
The Big Four at Four. Big Story 3.
Vieja Mariana de Jesus Meja Meja saw her son for the first time since mid-May. The two crossed the border illegally from Mexico into Arizona and were separated. She sued to get him back.
So we are really, really excited about the resolution today, and this incredible little kid has come home.
Attorney Mike Donovan says the two will head back to Texas, where she will await a decision on her asylum application.
So this is the Guatemalan mom who was detained at the border on May 19th near San Luis, Arizona, and her 7-year-old boy was taken away. And she is suing the Trump administration and was suing to get her son back. Now her son is back. We talked to Monica Lynch from Mac and Gatos, legal expert. There was no reason for her son to be taken away. They didn't tell her where he was. How long did it go? It went a while that she didn't know where the kid was. So
this is not the 8-month, that was the woman from Brazil who could not be reunited with her son. This was a number of months.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure. I think she was detained. Yeah, she was detained May 19th.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a couple of months. And this is the part that stood out to me. The 7-year-old boy was reunited with his mom at a D.C. area airport. What was mom telling the media, the news people, where they said her son was?
I don't remember.
A Phoenix facility.
Okay.
She flew from Phoenix Sky Harbor to BWI Airport. She flew to the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
That's 2,000 miles that they transported her son. I'm wishing for the best, but there are kids in New York State. They're in Virginia. They're all over the place.
Phoenix?
I hope. Phoenix is at least close to the border. I mean, you know what I mean? I just cannot believe we'll put them over here and we'll put them over here and we'll put them over here. Trying to reunite these kids, I am hoping for the best. I really am.
Obama had the problem with unaccompanied minors, didn't solve it. Donald Trump has had the problem with families from Central America coming here and asking for asylum. He hasn't solved the problem. He made the problem worse by separating children from their parents. It was so bad that his own family had to sit him down and say, this is a disgrace, you got to stop. And I don't know what to do with these families. Obama didn't know what to do with the unaccompanied minors. I think they're going to probably try and put them some. We heard earlier today they're going to put them in Yuma. They're going to have like a tent city out possibly in Yuma because of how many people that are coming over.
Supposedly, they're planning on detaining 25,000 people that are families instead of separating them. But right now, we've got administration officials saying, hey, everybody in Border Protection, they will be reunited with their families today. Hey, I'm crossing my fingers.
It's not going to be everybody. They can't do it.
I'm crossing my fingers. It's today or tomorrow or the weekend, but I don't know what to believe.
You're listening to the Big Four at Four.
The Big Four at Four. Big Story 4.
Representatives Rebecca Rios, Randall Fries, and Charlene Fernandez say they have serious concerns about the health and safety of children being held in Office of Refugee Resettlement Facilities in Arizona. The letter claims that children have been traumatized after being forcibly removed from their parents. The three lawmakers say they've been stonewalled every time they've tried to see the kids. They ask Ducey, Health Services Director Dr. Kara Christ, and Department of Child Safety Director Gregory McKay to do welfare checks on every child.
So Democratic lawmakers want Governor Ducey to go and check out the children and see who is here in Phoenix, how they are being treated. But, you know, again, this people use this as, you know, Democrats and Republicans use this to get political points.
Right.
I really don't think the Democratic lawmakers care about the kids. I don't think the Republican lawmakers care about the kids. I think they care about getting reelected, and I think that they like that there's this awful, awful thing going on.
That they can rail against.
They can rail against it. They can make money on it. They can get reelected because they can rail on the issue.
If you're Doug Ducey, do you even touch this with a 10-foot pole? I don't.
I think you got to go. And I think if it's in Arizona, I think you should see if the kids are being treated okay.
But if you're the governor, does that look like you're against Trump in a reelection cycle?
Sure.
If I'm Doug Ducey, I stay way low. Maybe you have somebody that knows somebody that works in another department go and check these kids. But if I'm Doug Ducey, I don't show up on the front door demanding to be let in like some people in Congress have done.
You've been listening to the Big Four at Four.
The Big Four at Four with Mac and Gatos. Get the Big Four at Four delivered to your phone. Subscribe to the Mac and Gatos podcast on Google Music or the Apple Podcast app.
Is the television show The Voice to blame for the fatal self-driving Uber crash in Tempe? Next.
Arizona's afternoon news with Mac and Gatos. KTAR News 92.3 FM. It's Arizona's afternoon news with Mac and Gatos. KTAR News 92.3 FM.
You ever watch the TV show The Voice?
NBC, yeah.
You watch it?
No, I've seen it on clips, but I've never sat down and watched a whole episode. Yeah. It's got like Blake Shelton, the guy from Maroon 5.
I watch America's Got Talent, I'm not sure.
Adam Levine from Maroon 5. Gwen Stefani.
The Voice, is it to blame for the fatal self-driving Uber crash in Tempe?
Hmm.
Yeah, how ridiculous does that sound? But it seems that the backup driver in the autonomous Uber vehicle, Rafaela Vasquez, you know, she's sitting in the car,
right.
Car's driving itself. She's looking at her phone, watching the Voice.
And she strikes someone, or I should say the car strikes
right.
Someone, killing them.
Tempe police saying Vasquez should have taken control of the vehicle in the event of an emergency, adding that had she been paying attention to the road, they think she could have stopped the car 42 feet before the fatal crash. Police concluding that Vasquez's inattention to the roadway and disregard for her assigned job function ultimately resulting in the death of Herzberg.
So the backup driver could be in big trouble. Uber could be in big trouble for not having the proper technology turned on. The poor woman who was jaywalking, well, she's at fault too, because she was in the middle of the road at night, hard for people to see. A lot of people made a lot of mistakes. It's like everybody made a mistake in this
situation.
There
are a number of different mistakes. Yeah.
But is this woman going to go to jail for sitting in the driver's seat?
All right, Monica Lindstrom, Mac and Gatos legal expert, joins us now. Monica, how incriminating is it for this woman to now admit in a self-driving vehicle, and it was being tested as a self-driving vehicle, that she was actually watching something on her phone?
Well, it is definitely incriminating, but I think it's not just that she was watching something on the phone, but the length of time that she was watching something on the phone. I think that what I read was over a span of 40 minutes or 50 minutes, she was actually watching something on the phone for almost 7 minutes. And so I think that's more incriminating than just a regular looking at your phone, because most people, when they're driving around, you look down at your phone, whether it's to put music on or it's to see a text message or it's to check your directions, right? So the fact that she's looking at her phone, not enough. The amount of time, I think, is a very big problem for her.
But isn't the entire purpose of an autonomous vehicle so you could watch, you know, a show?
You don't have to drive.
Yeah, maybe eventually, but she knew and Uber knew that this was tests, right? They were testing out the program. They were testing out the vehicle. They knew that they still needed somebody in that car because they put her in the car and she took the job to sit in that car and be the backup driver with the responsibility that she was still supposed to pay attention and take over in the event that she needed to. And this was an event that she needed to take over.
So is Uber at fault, or is she, like, she can be charged on her own, not Uber, even though she's an Uber employee? Is that what I'm taking out of this?
Absolutely, because this will be a criminal action. So actually both her and Uber can be charged, both or just one or neither, actually. But I think that we'll see something here. She can be charged with manslaughter, which is a class 2 felony. Remember, it only goes up to 1, which is murder. And then she could be charged with negligent homicide, which is a little bit lower. It's a class 4 felony. For manslaughter, the prosecutor just has to show that she had a conscious disregard of the risk, right? She grossly deviated from what a reasonable person would do.
Yeah, but couldn't you make the argument that she didn't have enough, even if she was paying attention, she wouldn't have had enough time to alter striking the woman?
And that's what the defense attorney would argue, that there wasn't enough time. But according to Tempe PD, they did some tests. And according to them, if their tests were done under similar or the same circumstances, she would have been able to stop. Had she not been watching The Voice or looking at her phone for as long as she was, she could have looked up, she would have recognized it, she would have hit the brakes or took evasive maneuvers, and she would not have hit the person. Now, that's all speculative, of course, but if this goes in front of a jury, that could be enough for them to find her guilty.
Monica Lindstrom is joining us, Mac and Gatos legal expert. We're discussing this woman who was the backup driver of the autonomous Uber vehicle.
Yeah, she was not operating the vehicle. I mean, this is important to realize.
She wasn't driving it.
She was not driving, but she was there in case something were to go wrong.
She was distracted.
And obviously didn't.
She was distracted. Yeah.
You know, and I understand that you guys are saying that, but she was the human being in the vehicle that had actual physical control of the vehicle.
Right.
Right? She could have taken that steering wheel at any point in time. She could have hit the brakes. She could have turned. She was the human being that could have made the difference. That was her job, to sit in there to make sure that nothing like this happened, right? And to take notes and to do whatever else Uber wanted her to do. That was her job. So to say that she wasn't driving it, I know that she wasn't driving. The program was, but yet she was still responsible.
That's a good point.
We can go ahead and say she wasn't the driver, but she was, because she was the one in the driver's seat. And one thing that she might be able to argue, or her attorney might be able to argue, is that Uber, if they told her this was safe and they told her that they needed her to take notes and they needed her to not keep her eyes on the road, well, then maybe she was just doing her job and she thought that it was safe enough. That could help in her defense.
Monica, real quick, because we're running out of time. She was watching her phone in an autonomous vehicle, autonomous mode, right? Well, what if one of us, we leave, we get in our car today, we text and drive, and at that moment we hit and kill somebody? Are we up for the same penalty, a class two felony?
Yep.
Okay.
For manslaughter, yeah.
All right.
Yep.
Monica Lindstrom, Mac and Gatos legal expert. Have a great weekend, Monica. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye, guys.
Don't you have a feeling that this woman, even though she did it hard, she didn't do her job? I mean, no question about
it. She was asleep at the switch.
Basically.
Yeah.
Do you think she actually knew that she do you think she knew the risks if she was going to look at her phone?
No. I don't think so. I think that's her fault too, though.
That's her fault for not reading what she's supposed to do.
Her job is to be the backup.
Yeah.
And she wasn't prepared to be the backup.
I guess so.
Yeah.
All right, coming up next, a former member of the Department of Homeland Security says Trump's zero tolerance policy, it's totally ineffective. And we'll ask him why he thinks that way next.
Arizona's Afternoon News with Mac and Gatos. KTAR News, 92.3 FM. Arizona's Afternoon News with Mac and Gatos. KTAR News, 92.3 FM.
Donald Trump's zero tolerance policy still in effect, but is it effective? Let's talk about that with someone who knows about being at the head of an agency, John Cohen, ABC News contributor. He's the former acting undersecretary for the Department of Homeland Security. John, how are you today?
Nice to be with you.
Hey, John, you say this zero tolerance approach is not effective. Why?
Well, zero tolerance policing or zero tolerance law enforcement strategies, it's not a new concept. It's something that's been used in communities across the country to deal with emerging crime problems. But what we find is the strategy, which involves arresting and detaining low-level criminals or people involved in minor crimes, has two problems. One, they're very resource intensive, so they require a large number of people, they require jail space, they require people to transport folks to courts, they overwhelm the courts. So you have so many people focusing on the arrest, detention, and booking of minor criminals that they don't you're diverting the resources away from major crimes and other serious issues. The other problem is the purpose of these types of zero tolerance strategies is to serve as a deterrent. If there is a deterrent effect, it's usually very short duration, and that's if at all.
John, the alternative is what, though? It's catch and release, and that's a bad policy. Trump's separation of children from their parents was the worst policy.
If it's not zero tolerance and it's not catch and release, does it leave us? Where does it leave us?
Well, there are a number of things we can do. I mean, if you look in the past how we dealt with this issue, we were aggressive in dealing with those who crossed the border illegally. In some cases, we would immediately return those captured by CBP back over to the border. In other cases, we would detain the individuals in an immigration detention facility. And in other cases, you'd use other means like ankle bracelets and GPS to track these people prior to their court proceeding. What's different here is that the Trump administration has made the decision not only to prosecute each individual captured for illegal border crossing, or at least each adult, but they're putting them in pretrial detention. And by putting them in pretrial detention, what they're doing is they're handing them over to the U.S. Marshals and putting them into a federal jail. So in the past, when you could detain a family as a whole in an immigration holding facility, or perhaps put them back into the community but have tracking devices placed on the adults, you're now putting adults in a federal jail. You can't put children in that same jail because they're not being charged with a crime.
Right.
So you have to put them someplace else, and that's why they're being separated.
Mm. John Cohen, ABC News contributor, former acting undersecretary for the Department of Homeland Security. It also seems to me, John, that you're just overwhelming the court system again. You're immediately putting them into federal detention. I don't know if there's a rocket docket or if they're increasing the number of cases that they can see in a day, but I would just think that would exhaust federal resources as well.
Yeah, you're exactly right, and we're already hearing stories about this. We're hearing about 70, 80 people at a time going into a federal courtroom and having to appear before a judge. But what they're also doing is distracting the assistant U.S. attorneys who are down there. And that means that those assistant U.S. attorneys aren't available to deal with more serious issues like gangs or violent criminals or major drug traffickers. And let's not also forget that it takes resources to house these individuals, to transport these individuals to the courtroom. The problem here is that, again, improper entry, a first offense for crossing the border illegally, is a misdemeanor crime. That is similar to a serious traffic offense, to shoplifting, to soliciting a prostitute, to having a small quantity of illegal drugs. In most cases, you can cite people out for these types of crimes, give them a notice to appear, and then have them appear in court. And in fact, statistics do show that even those who come here illegally, who are handled in a manner of being given a notice to appear, and you use some type of tracking device, well over 95% of those people end up making their court appearance and are handled through the judicial process.
Now, wait a minute, John. We've heard the exact opposite. We've heard that the catch and release program,
nobody shows up.
They just disappear into society, and that's the whole problem. Is that these people are given a court date and you never see them again? But you're saying it's the exact opposite. That as long as they have some kind of GPS system that holds them accountable, 95% of them show up to a court date?
Over 95%. And you're raising a really interesting point. And as somebody who has spent decades working in law enforcement and Homeland Security, what I find most objectionable about the current debate on immigration and illegal immigration is the amount of inaccurate information that's being put out there. The idea that state and local law enforcement and federal authorities don't work tirelessly to go after those who are here illegally, who are involved in violent gangs and drug trafficking and other violent crime, is just a myth. But the problem is, when you employ a strategy like zero tolerance, you're actually distracting resources or diverting resources away from being able to go after those violent criminals, because those resources are being used to deal with women and children and men who are seeking to come to this country to better their lives. Doesn't mean they should come in here illegally, but we have limited resources that can work on immigration-related issues. And from a law enforcement perspective, it makes more sense to use those limited resources to go after violent criminals or those who are engaged in serious illegal activity.
John Cohen is joining us, former acting undersecretary for the Department of Homeland Security. John, if you were the current secretary of DHS and President Trump came to you and said, I'm going to separate kids from their families, what would you have told him?
I would resign.
Wow.
Would you have at least tried to convince him of something else, or would you have just said, that's it, I'm out?
I would have tried. You know, I have a little bit of sympathy for the current Secretary of Homeland Security, a little bit, but there is a very strong ideological viewpoint that's coming from the White House on these issues. I think the secretary, you either have a choice that you're going to follow that philosophy that's coming out of the White House, or you choose to do what's right. And from my perspective, the way that this operation was planned, the way that this operation was carried out, the flawed philosophy behind this operation, I couldn't work in that environment. And if someone forced me to implement something that was damaging, from my perspective, to our efforts to protect our communities because it's causing a diversion of vital resources away from dealing with violent criminals and violent activity so that we can lock up men, women, and children who do not represent serious threat to the safety of this country, then I couldn't work for that person. I would resign.
John Cohen, ABC News contributor, former acting undersecretary for the Department of Homeland Security. John, thanks again. Always good to have you on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
All right, coming up, we've got the 5 o'clock KTAR News expansion. Arizona's prison boss has been found in contempt over inmate care. The latest is coming up. 15 minutes of commercial-free, nonstop news, traffic, and weather. That's all next.